Hello, Ryan Phelan here with the Epic Phelan Podcast. And this week we are going to have Mr. Tan, who is an instructor in Shaolin Wushu. We talk about the four elements that make a complete martial artist, along with Mr. Tan's 55-year history within the martial arts. All right, welcome to another episode of the Epic Phelan Podcast. Today I have with us Mr. Tan from Shaolin Wushu, Canada. Mr. Tan, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
No problem. So, first things first, tell me about Wushu. What is Wushu?
Well, Wushu means, the word Wushu is actually martial arts.
Okay.
A lot of people mistaken that Wushu means another style of martial art. Most common term of martial art in Chinese is Kung Fu, which is actually a dialect word. And Wushu is a Mandarin language, is a national language of China. They speak Mandarin. So Wushu means martial art in Mandarin.
Oh, okay. So what got you into doing Wushu?
Oh, when I was young, when I was about 10, I got bullied. And that's how I started learning martial art.
So you got bullied, and where did you go first?
Well, I started with Shaolin right away. I wanted to join karate or taekwondo and so on and so forth. And my dad said, you know, that's not good for you. I think perhaps he thinks that it's maybe a little bit more aggressive, you feel.
Oh, okay.
You know. And I took a little bit of boxing when I was in school.
Right on.
Yeah. But I still stay with Shaolin until today.
Are there other martial arts that kind of interest you that you look at and say, okay, like you, so you mentioned boxing. Did you like to watch boxing or even MMA when you're...
Yeah, I like to watch boxing, you know, kind of because my school is, they specialize in boxing and rugby. So I don't like rugby because I don't like all the mud, that kind of stuff. So I'm kind of a clean freak, you know.
Yeah.
So I took up boxing in school when I was younger. You know, of course, in between Shaolin and boxing. As for martial art, mixed martial art and so on, I don't really watch them, you know. But even if I do, I just watch and see, you know, what are the style, the tactics, and how I can, you know, overcome that, you know, in case if I meet another mixed martial artist, at least I would know. But not to learn the style, about how they apply, but to counter their application.
As a knowledge as to what the different styles are doing.
Yeah.
There has been a big push with martial arts to go into like the mixed martial arts, and to me, the mixed martial arts seems like it's sort of like one style on its own now. Like it's sport oriented, right? And it has the art, but it doesn't have so much of the. It's very one sided, right? Like where maybe like a wushu or kung fu like has some different elements, maybe more of an artistic side to it.
I think most martial art are, I would say, more of a sports nowadays. Right? In fact, I would think all martial arts are sports now.
Yeah.
If you talk about karate, taekwondo, even kung fu or wushu, it's all sports now.
Right? Yeah.
And even martial art, I mean mixed martial art, I think it has developed into a sports so much so that it's more like money making, you know, it's just very commercialized.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I think all this martial art style of... they all become so commercialized that it's all about money. Mm-hmm. So, like I say, even Wushu or Kung Fu, there are many, many Chinese martial artists going to that direction. But if you go to China, the same thing, there's a lot of school that is so commercialized. Even they talk about the Shaolin Temple.
Yes.
You know, the Shaolin Temple... it's so commercialized that there are so many satellite schools out there teaching Shaolin, right? So it's all about money.
Yeah.
To find a real traditional martial artist, you know, whether it's Shaolin or different styles like Angar or Choi Lu Fan and so on and so forth, you have to go out in the outskirts, maybe up in the farm somewhere, you know, remote. And even that, it's difficult to find someone who really wants to teach you because they tend to be very conservative. And they teach somebody that they know or they like or they feel that they are comfortable with. Otherwise, you know, I got one of a student who went to China as a school teacher, actually.
Oh, okay.
And he's gone to a lot of martial school. He says it's so commercialized. You know, a school can have 30, 40, 50 students, you know, in a group or like in a class.
Oh,
like,
wow.
And he said, but what did he do? It's all the same basic acrobatic stuff of martial art, of wushu,
mm-hmm.
the modern style of martial art. And he asked me about traditional martial art. I said, you got to go out in the farm or in the outskirts of in the rural areas. And he speaks very fluent Chinese. Being a Caucasian, he speaks fluent Chinese.
Oh, wow.
Right? And he went and he found some of these old conservative people sitting around having tea or coffee. And he talked to them. Of course, they're excited for being a white person speaking Mandarin, you know. So they were interested in him, talking to him. And he asked them about martial art. They spoke to him about martial art. But when he started to talk about more about, can you teach me and show me some moves and all that, they tend to be very reserved and they draw back. That's what he told me. And I expected that because, you know, this is the culture.
Yes.
So that's why Chinese martial arts tend to be a little bit diluted nowadays because of people tend to be a bit more self-centered, a bit more selfish in trying to expose it, to show what they know.
Yeah.
And what you see nowadays are all those modern style martial arts and...
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, all that kind of fancy name and that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Even the word martial arts has kind of gotten diluted itself, where... Again, with mixed martial arts and even just like the different kickboxings and K1 and all this. What, in your opinion, makes a complete martial artist?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I always say any kind of martial art, any style is good. Okay? It's the competence of the student, not the style of martial art. Okay, regardless of judo, karate, taekwondo, whatever, so on and so forth, kung fu.
Yeah. Right?
That's one point. Now, I think a complete martial artist lies on three things. One, he must be able to perform a form, or in karate called a kata, right? Or
yeah.
In taekwondo, a pattern.
Yeah.
Right? Similarly with kung fu and so on, it's what we call a pattern, kata, or form. Right? So, if a student can do that over and over and over again, repeatedly, doing the same stuff over again for year after years after years, right? So what does that contribute? That contributes self-discipline. Self-discipline meaning, you know, some people get bored after doing a thing that a few times they say, oh, I already know. No, I want to know something new. But to do something over and over again that you already know and try to perfect it, of course, there's no perfection, but most people cannot do that. Okay. The other thing, by doing the forms and pattern, also contribute to physical development. When I say physical development, it's like going out to the gym to work out, like a boxer would go, you know, do a lot of skipping and so on, you know, work on the bags, right? So that helps physical development, like sit-ups, push-ups, that kind of stuff, all physical development. But doing the patterns also build your body physically. So by doing patterns and forms, builds physical development, self-discipline. That's one. Two, to be a good martial artist, you must be able to get as a sports. But doesn't mean that you need to compete. If you have a friend, maybe you learn karate, another friend learns taekwondo, and somebody learns kung fu, and you all get along, get around together, you know, practice, do a little bit of sparring, exchange your skills and your knowledge, you know, try and bring it to the next level, you know. And with certain controls, I believe in full contact, you know. But full contact doesn't mean trying to hurt a guy or trying to break his nose or his teeth or his jaw and so on and so forth. But a sport that is understanding, or mutual understanding, respect for one another. Of course, it hurts a little bit, but to a certain degree. Right? So that's two. And last but not least, that you must be able to take care of yourself. When I say take care of yourself, means in the event of certain confrontation, how you can talk your way out, how you deal with the situation, and then sometimes it escalates to physical, then that's where your skill comes into play, and that's how you can take care of yourself. So these are the three main things that to be a good martial artist. Doesn't matter what style is it. If it's karate, taekwondo, kung fu, you know, any style, mixed martial art, doesn't matter. It has, if a person can do that, it's fine. And that makes a good martial artist.
Okay, that's perfect. That's exactly what I was going for and what I was asking. But you kind of mentioned the patterns and doing like highly repetitive versus getting a diverse skill set. So in practice, doing the same types of exercises over and over again or trying to learn new skills, what should you be focusing on more, like being a master of one or a jack of all trades?
You know, as I mentioned, I think earlier I did mention about, you know, it's not about learning more. When I say more, meaning can be different styles or can be the similar style, but trying to, you know, especially talk about forms or katas or pattern.
Yeah.
Okay. To learn more does not make you a good martial artist. To learn or understand the concept, the application, why. Okay. Like, for example, okay, you're told by your teacher to do a pattern over and over again. So you must understand, why is he telling me to do over again? Okay. Okay. Maybe he tells you because self-discipline. Okay. Physical development. Okay. That's one thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you yourself, all you need is to learn one art. For example, you take any art, take karate, for example, which is the most common martial art style of martial art now, karate, judo, and so on and so forth. Yeah. They're all very common. Now, if you can learn one, the skill, and then you watch other style of martial art. But when you watch other style of martial art, that's not mean that, like say, for example, kung fu, maybe it's not good at kicking. So maybe I should learn taekwondo kicks. Or even karate says, maybe my kicking is not so good, I should learn taekwondo kicks. Maybe a karate guy will say, no, maybe I should learn kung fu because, you know, I can perform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, like I said, a good martial artist must be able to perform to show what he has learned.
Yes.
So actually it's four things, not three things. I was wrong just now.
Oh, there you okay? go.
Four things. You must be able to perform. Perform meaning if someone asks you, oh, you learned kung fu, can you show me what you do? So you say, at least you do something. You don't have to be perfect, don't have to be the best out of it, but reasonably. Okay? So coming back to an individual, if he takes, like for example, he doesn't have good kicks, he wants to learn taekwondo. No, that's not the point. Every martial art has everything, but some are better, like maybe they focus more on taekwondo, focus more on legs. Karate maybe focus a bit more punching, you know, or maybe a slightly different kick. Mixed martial art try to take every little things from everybody. Taekwondo,
yeah.
Karate, every mixed martial art, right? That is what they try and learn, and then they apply. And I think the main thing about mixed martial art, mostly they apply on jiu-jitsu and aikido, that kind of stuff, grappling.
Yeah, and Muay Thai.
And yeah, and that kind. So, nothing against mixed martial art or anything like that, right? But like I said, mixed martial art, like I said, if you are in a confrontation, maybe in a bar, for example.
Okay.
And, you know, normally you go to a bar, you don't go on your own. Mostly you got buddies to go with you. More often than not, you have buddies. Or even you go alone, you have buddies there that you know, right? If you come to a confrontation with somebody, physical confrontation, right? And you meet a mixed martial artist or an aikido or a jiu-jitsu guy who takes you down, right? Give you an armbar lock and so on and so forth. I think that kind of style of martial art is good for people who are in the security work, like maybe bouncing in the bar or something like that. You know, to restrain somebody, right? Not to hurt somebody, but to restrain somebody, right? Because they don't want to hurt somebody because they will get sued.
Yeah.
Right? They don't want to restrain. But in a fight, there's no rules, there's no law, right?
Yes.
Right? If the guy is, his adrenaline pumps up and he's just mad, if he thinks that he can break your nose, he will do that. Right. So with that kind of style of martial art, you can only deal with one person at a time.
Yes.
Okay. Like I said, you are expert in jiu-jitsu. No prejudice, nothing against them, right?
Yeah.
You take me down, right? And I'm really hurt badly. You're really good at it. But do you think my buddies will stand there and then you do whatever you want to do to me?
Yeah, no.
Somebody's going to come and just kick you or do something, right? So that's what you can do, only one, right? Of course, mixed martial art teach you how to kick and punch and all, but a lot of these martial, sometimes they emphasize so much on one thing that they forgot about other things, right? So like say, if you meet jiu-jitsu or aikido, like again I say, no prejudice to any of this martial art, you take me down, I got my buddies. You cannot deal with two, three. You can only do one. But if you're a boxer, mm-hmm. you know, you can just weave your way around. You can, you know, wriggle away. You know, can take one down. You hope to take another guy down. You can jab. You can hook, whatever you want. And with a little bit of extra knowledge, if you can do a bit of kicking, you know how to kick a little bit. Even you don't have to be an expert in kicking. A simple kick can still hurt somebody. And like I said, Thai boxing is good, right? Because it's not all the time on the ground, but they are on the feet.
Yes.
So you want to be on the feet. You know, even if you want to run, it's easier for you to run than if you're on the floor.
Yeah.
Right? A disadvantage. But like I said, I'm not saying one is better than the other, right? But depends on the individual, how you look at it. You want to take it as a sports, you want to take it as a job, that being a security guy, you know, I think that is good, right? Being a cop, taking down. Don't forget, even cops doesn't come alone. They come with 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 people.
Yeah.
Right? One person may be the bad guy, you can get 5 cops around. Maybe
yeah.
You get even 10 cops around. So don't tell me that 5 people cannot take down 1 people.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that if you learn something, if I say you think your kick is no good, don't learn how to kick. You go and watch Taekwondo, think how to counter their kick. Because if you learn the way they kick and you can do that to somebody, but if somebody can counter, then what's the use? So you better learn how to counter rather than learn how to kick. Or how to punch.
Yeah, so that comes with like the understanding.
Yeah, that's why I say the concept.
Yeah, you understand the concept. The
yeah.
So rather than doing, it's great to be able to practice a kick or a punch or a grapple.
Yeah.
You know, a thousand times.
Yeah.
But if you don't understand the concept,
yeah. So you can be a grappler, right? But you also try and understand, like, say, okay, if I meet a person who's not a ground fighter.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. How do I deal with the person? Okay. How can I apply? I cannot apply if I'm a ground fighter, I'm in a bar. I'm not saying bars are the bad place, but anywhere can be a problem.
Yeah.
Right? And if you take somebody down, how am I going to deal with somebody else if the guy's got buddies?
Yeah.
Right? Even if the guy doesn't have buddies, some people may not like the way you do to somebody else, and they just interfere and, you know, get themselves involved.
No, right? Absolutely.
They felt that maybe you're a bully or they don't like, then you get hurt, right? So they must understand, okay, if I'm in that situation, what am I going to do? My grappling alone doesn't help me at all, right? So mixed martial says, okay, I learned every style, which is good. But the problem is that sometimes they forget what they have learned, when they should apply and when they shouldn't apply. Situation, right?
Absolutely. So saying that, you've obviously been doing martial arts for a long time. How long would you say you've been doing martial arts for?
Over 55 years.
Over 55 years.
I'm already 70 now.
You don't look 70, that's for sure. So what brought you to Canada? Or you're originally from Singapore?
Yes. Actually, life in Singapore is it's not bad. It's pretty nice, you know, but things are very expensive there, right? And very stressful, and everybody's, you know, on a go, you know? And the government wants only the top people. They just cream the top people, the smartest and the best, right?
Yeah.
And schools are pretty difficult for children. There's no more childhood for kids, you know. Every day there's homework, not for one subject. You have English, math, science, geography, and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
And you have to take all that. And they have weekly tests, right? They have monthly tests, right? And then they have semester tests. And then on top of that, it's so competitive that sometimes envy and so on and so forth. Like say, you get one family, the kid goes for swimming. Another kid says, the parent says, oh, you know, the kid goes swimming. My kid's got to go swimming too. You know, it's kind of trying to compete all the time. A very competitive life.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that it's pretty stressful actually. So I was thinking about my kids, you know. Yeah, if they can make it, fine. If they are just mediocre, just on average, what can you do?
Yeah.
So I moved them here, we moved here. And like I said, things are cheaper, things are more relaxed, right? And to buy a car here, you know, I can buy a car back in Singapore. You know, the price of Singapore is like three and a half times more than what you pay for a car here.
Oh, okay.
You can buy a car for $50,000 here. You probably pay a car down there for maybe $150,000 to $200,000.
Oh, wow. Is that much more?
Yeah.
Wow. How about housing? Being a realtor, that always interests me.
that for a house, you know, for example, an average house, an average home, take an average home for about maybe where, pick a place where you feel that.
For, say Evergreen, say $400,000 or $500,000.
$400,000, actually, okay? Put it to the lowest or the $400,000.
Yeah.
Or maybe you got to put the highest, whatever. Average, I say $400,000.
Yeah.
Right? In Evergreen, I'm sure you can find 400 to 500,
yeah,
or even slightly more, right?
Yeah.
So let's say 400, right? $400 with an area of what, the housing, 1600, 1500 square feet?
Yeah, 16, 18, yeah.
Yeah, for about 400,000, 15, 18, 4 plus,
yeah,
right? And with a little small yard, reasonably, you know, yard, right?
Yeah.
And for that price, you probably pay probably 1.8 to million.
Oh, wow. So like Vancouver prices.
Yeah. Right. Even for an apartment, a simple apartment, government built apartments, they are like maybe 3 rooms with a living room, kitchen, you know, average maybe like say, take maybe 20 over years, 30 years back, like say maybe at that time, it was like, even cost about $300,000.
Oh, and that's 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's, yeah.
That 300 over 1,000. So today, the price of the houses, at the kind of house, the same, the kind of apartment, you probably pay about what? Maybe 800,000.
That's wild.
700,000.
That's wild.
So, you know, it's hard unless you make a lot.
So definitely a lot more affordable here in Calgary.
Yeah, of course.
What are your favorite parts about Calgary?
The food is difficult for me because, you know, there's not many options of food because, you know, you have probably just Western food, maybe some Asian food, and even Asian food are not Asian food. Like, you know, Chinese food is not Chinese food. Chinese food is for Western palates.
Yeah.
Right? Ginger beef. There's no ginger beef in Singapore or in Hong Kong, you know.
Yeah, Calgary invented ginger beef.
Yeah, not the kind of ginger beef that you have in Hong Kong or in Singapore or Malaysia or Indonesia and so on.
Yeah.
Right? Even Indonesian food, like in the farmer's market, you have Indonesian food and it's not that authentic, actually.
No, okay.
Yeah. They have to make adjustment for Western palates.
Mm-hmm. What do you like to do when you're not doing wushu or kung fu? Like, is it like bowling or?
Yeah, I bowl a lot. I bowl every Monday morning, you know, in the seniors league. But I spend most of my time, though I don't teach, but I still work on my own. I'm a little bit fanatic, actually. I get up early in the morning at 5:30.
Yeah.
And by the time I wash up, drink some water, by the time I brush up, everything takes about 10, 15 minutes. Then I do some stretching. So 6 o'clock, I'm down in my basement already. So 5:30 to 5:45, brushing up, drinking some water, just that short little bit break. And then 5:45 to 6, I do a little bit of stretching here and there. What I call a bit of Qigong, you know, breathing.
What is Qigong?
It's a good question you asked me. Qigong has similarity to Tai Chi.
Okay.
Okay. Tai Chi has a set of continuous movements. Tai Chi needs time, needs space. In Qigong, you don't need time, you don't need space. It's more like stretching, breathing, balance. Okay, these are the main focus on Qigong. Of course, if you hear a lot of people, you read in the internet, a lot of things that talk about Qigong, give you about energy and about earth, metal, and so on and so forth. And then they talk about... that's the reason sometimes Chinese martial art has actually been so diluted and been... I'm very embarrassed about some of Chinese martial art. They talk about so much qi that they can, without touching you, you can just fall back.
Like the video games where they...
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's either psychologically or I don't know how this teacher trained the students to, you know, to do that. But in reality, it's not that when I touch you, I can put you to sleep completely.
Yeah.
Or without even touching you, looking at you. I mean, you've seen this a lot on the internet, right?
Yeah.
The guy, you know, not only Chinese martial, some other style martial, did like karate, you know, some... especially in the Western world, especially in the United States, in America. And it's crazy because it doesn't happen that way. So when you talk about qi, doesn't mean you know, you can do that kind of stuff. It's like being invisible. You know, Qigong is more for health. Like I said, breathing, stretching.
Yeah. Right?
So why do you need to stretch? Because when you get older, you get stiffer and stiffer.
Yes.
Right? Eventually, they put you in a box, right?
Yeah.
So you need to stretch, right? You have that flexibility, that mobility. When you're younger, like a little baby, if you break your arm, you heal easier, faster. When you're older, you heal a bit more difficult. Moreover, your bone density starts to go lower down, right?
Yes.
When you're younger, you're stronger. So you need to do that kind of exercise. Keep maintaining that exercise by stretching your tendons, your muscles, and by stretching, by doing some workout, by balance, that helps in your daily life. Now, qi, to me, interpretation of qi is actually your blood. Your blood is your energy, like your battery. Your
okay.
blood is like your battery. That your blood circulates, that's how you survive, how you live.
Yes.
Right? But a lot of people interpret qi as something miracle. You know, without touching you, I can heal you. You know, or maybe they say, I put my finger on your hand or your arm, and he says, can you feel the energy flowing to your feet or to your head? That is garbage, you know. And that actually upsets me as a martial artist, because I feel that it doesn't create a good impression of the kind of Chinese martial art.
Yeah, it's like the faith healers on TV.
Yeah. Instead of a faith healer, I call them a fake healer.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Instead of faith healer, you call fake healer. Right? Same. Like I said, a lot of martial art has changed. Take an example, like some karate, no prejudice again, okay?
Yeah.
Because karate has got different styles. You know, same like Chinese martial art, they got different styles. Now in karate, you have Shotokan, Shitoryu, Goju-ryu, and so on and so forth. Same like Chinese kung fu, you have different styles like Shaolin, Hanga, Wing Chun, you know, and on so on and so forth, right? And different styles. The things that, especially, again, nothing against Americans. In America, you see a lot of martial artists, some kids that are taught by teachers. Very fanciful, very impressive. Doing all the somersaults thing with all the yelling and very impressive, you know. But when you watch, and after when they complete their art, complete their pattern, their katas, and the way they end it, you see, I being a martial artist, but not a karate master, right? How would a karate master feel in Japan if he's a Japanese karate master and observe these people perform? See, when they finish the pattern, they go, like, you know, the way they yell so loud.
Yeah, yeah.
They show their facial expression, their arm. I think you know.
A lot of theatrics.
Yeah. I know. So I'm not a karate person, and yet I feel offended by that. And just imagine a Japanese who is a true master, how would he feel? You make a mockery of the art.
Yes.
You know? And it's same thing like kung fu. They do the same thing, like talking about qi, and it's almost similar like karate people who do that.
Yeah.
And that's not martial art.
No.
That's just, I would say, show. Right? But I don't know. Sometimes people just get sucked in.
Yeah. It's easy to be sucked in. It's like the magic pill. If I don't have to really train it, and I just know one move, the death touch then and then there's an aura of mystery behind it where it's like, I could do this, but I don't want to hurt you.
Right? you know you can touch a certain point, a certain meridian point, it helps. Okay.
Yeah.
Like your floor, maybe you sprain your neck or your shoulder or something. It is like you have to press it. There's also qi, actually. You're pressing certain point, like you take a hose.
Yeah.
And you have water, and you squeeze one part of it, and then down maybe another 5 feet, you squeeze it, tighten it, lock it up, and when you turn it on and you let it go, you got an airlock there.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, martial, you want to have the flow, smooth flow. So the qi is that you want your body to flow. Same like your blood doesn't go enough to your heart, you're going to have a problem. The blood doesn't go to your brain, you're going to have a problem.
Yes.
But the problem people don't understand, people think qi is so strong that, by having qi, it's like a miracle. You know, you're so strong. And so that's why I said earlier, qi is actually your blood. For human, the qi is actually your blood.
Yes.
How you continue. I give you an example, like for my hands, you can see here, if I put my hands like that, right?
Yes.
Now, if I hold it tight, it becomes white. Right, so what I do is like the hose, the water hose, I lock it, so the blood doesn't flow. I mean, it does flow, right? Even when you stand straight, it flows through our gravity, it flows through your fingers. But sometimes people's fingers are cold, and it says, my hand is cold. But your hand is cold doesn't mean your hand is dead, meaning there's not enough chi. When there's not enough chi, doesn't mean that, you know, some kind of supernatural kind of element that, you know, produce supernatural powers. The reason that when you talk about chi, that means there's not enough blood flows fast enough to go down to your fingers and to circulate back, right? So that's why you have cold hands, but you have blood flowing, but flow of gravity, but not fast enough. But if you exercise the chi or do qigong, you exercise, you develop the energy. Same, I put here, I tighten my finger, it's white, right? So the blood stops. Now, if I relax, you see, my fingers get really red suddenly.
Yes.
Right? Because the energy, the force of energy. So in qigong, you practice that kind of exercise. You circulate your whole body with the chi, and there's blood.
And just blood flow, and blood flow and circulation. Yeah.
But I don't know, this is my interpretation. I mean, there are a lot of other people who's going to say that, no, this is wrong, this is... But I think sometimes you have to use a common sense.
That's that always wins,
I always tell my children, right? I tell my children, I tell my students, life is about cultivation and realization. Of course, in Chinese martial art, we learn philosophy, especially where I come from, my master, my grandmaster, who is actually a Shaolin abbot in the Shaolin Temple in Singapore. Right? We do learn that philosophy, some of this office philosophy. So we always say that life is about cultivation and realization. Life is not about how smart you are, how stupid you are. If you're not that smart, doesn't mean you're stupid. It's the only thing that you just need to cultivate.
Yes.
Okay? And if you're smart, but if you don't try and apply in the right way, and you're lazy, you know, and of course it doesn't improve. There's no progress. Right? This is friction slows progress.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So you must cultivate. Life's about cultivation. You need to exercise. You need to keep yourself and understand why people do this, why people do that. Does it make sense? Especially nowadays, you have a lot of fake news, a lot of all kinds of nonsense. Use a bit of common sense. Start thinking, cultivate, and try and improve your life.
Absolutely. Now, you've kind of touched on a few different things. We've talked about, like, the more aggressive side of martial arts. We've talked about, you know, the softer side with, like, a qigong and, you know, kind of like a tai chi type element. And you're also mentioning earlier your hands. And I couldn't help but notice, like, you train your hands, obviously, to, you know, and they're definitely a lot tougher than my baby soft hands. but what do you think about like breaking and like doing like the bricks and the boards and
A lot of this, not only just Chinese martial art, any style of martial art, a lot of destruction, a lot of breaking of boards and bricks and so on, and a lot of fancy stuff, like, you know, like they talk again like about chi and all that, you know. You know, like sometimes they can hold a piece of paper with their fingers and they start making smoke and that kind of stuff. And
they, you know, like magicians,
I call that circus stunt.
Oh, circus stunt, yeah.
Even you have seen someone pick my pictures that I've done. The last video I had when I was in Singapore, I broke a 3-inch square marble, okay, with my wrist, right?
Yeah.
And to me, that was my first time in all my years of martial training I perform in public.
Oh, really?
I do it at home on my own to see what I can do. But I was asked to perform because the guy was short of people, and he says asked me to help him out. And we are all from the same family because we went back for our Shaolin anniversary. So the people who do the destruction, they were short of people. And he says, can you volunteer and help? And I said, no, I've never done this in my life in the public. You know, so I did it. Right. But I wasn't happy in the sense that it doesn't glorify me. I don't feel great about it because to me it's a circus stunt. Anybody can do it. Okay.
Yeah.
Like you can see standing on eggs. Oh, you have seen what I do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I do once, but I never do over and over again because to me it's a circus stunt.
Yeah.
All right. Breaking boards. I think it's circus stunt. You know. Of course, you need a little bit of an art there. That's why it calls martial arts. Like dancing is an art. Painting, everything is an art. You know, you must have certain basics, right? But that is not difficult to train. I mean, conditioning my hands. Why? Conditioning my hands is not to just to break boards or break bottles or glass or whatever, right? Or lying down on glass or broken glass. and when you're lying on a broken leg, oh, this is chi, you know. These are all circus stunt.
Yes.
Right? So I don't fancy this kind of stuff. I do it for myself, for my satisfaction. I do it because of discipline. That means I can do it every day without fear. I can do it. Like I said earlier, I wake up at 5:30. At 6 o'clock, I'm down in the basement. I work with the bags for an hour. And then another half an hour, I work karas, or we call patterns or forms. And then I do a little bit of loose, when I say loose exercise, meaning like, you know, different techniques, like really like, you know, like shadow boxing, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right? That takes already an hour and a half, right? Then I spend 7:30 to 8 o'clock, I spend half an hour meditating. And I can time myself without looking at the clock. Like say I want to stop at 8 o'clock, plus minus, I will open my eyes, I'm awake.
Okay.
Right, so that's what I do. And that's my life for years until now. And sometimes I feel a bit tired, but I tell myself, I've done it for so many years. Does it make any difference? I only spoil myself only on weekends and public holidays that I don't work out. That's my rest day.
That's a lot of work. Yeah, and that's like your...
I think that's not workout. That's not a lot of workout. There's a lot of discipline.
Oh, yeah. that's true. Are you still teaching? Are you teaching like Qigong? Are you teaching...
Yeah, I still teach.
Yeah?
I teach private classes and semi-private classes out of my home in my basement. Well, I used to run a school down in McLeod Trail in Heritage. That was like maybe over years ago. For the last 15, 18 years, I think maybe, I've been doing private classes. And semi-private. And then Qigong classes. I do have Qigong classes on Sunday morning. You know, I run a class down at Thorncliffe Community Center. A private group, actually. They have been with me for the last almost 18 to 20 years. Some of them are seniors, 80 years old. Some of them 70 plus. I do have younger ones, like 40, 50. And we have classes, except in summer, that we take a break.
Okay.
And that's a group class. But that class seems to be a bit more fun class than really a class, because I think the seniors are more, they joke and laugh more than they really work out. I think it's like more like a social gathering kind of classes that we have.
Yeah.
You know, so this is what I do.
Right then. So if somebody wanted to check you out, you have a website or?
Yeah. I got a website, www.shaolinwusu.ca. And you can call me, you know. And I'm not good at text messages and all that. I prefer to use telephone and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. That's perfect. So we'll include your phone number here in the podcast. What is your phone number?
It's 403-99-88-119.
There you go. Sounds good. Well, it's really good having you on. I really enjoy like listening to the different philosophies that you have, and I'll maybe have you on again. Until next time, Mr. Tan, stay epic. Thanks again for listening to Epic Phelan. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, give me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Real Ryan Phelan, and visit my website at thecalgaryrealestateguy.com. Until next time, stay epic.